It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
You know, and we have been just talking about the dilemma of choosing whether to go hunting or fishing on a given weekend, but we have actually arrived at that time. Now it is for sure one of those days, and we get kicked off now on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Captain Mike, how are you?
Doing good, Sean. So let me ask you, yeah. What are you going to do today?
Well,
It's football season in the midst of that. Mm-hmm. You got hunting season going on. Mm-hmm. Bass fishing is doing great. Mm-hmm. Speckled trout fishing is starting to get good again. So what are you going to do?
I just checked off all those things on my list. Okay. Yeah, I'm doing all this. No, this afternoon I'll go shoot doves, most likely. You know, that's what I've been working on. That's one of those things you and I were talking before we started the show this morning. And I think, you know, land managers, however you do, whether it's for deer hunting, turkey hunting, quail hunting, dove hunting, when you got blood, sweat, and tears in your management,
yeah,
it leads you to want to go even more, I think.
I think you're right.
You put the effort in.
You want to get some benefit out.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't. And who knows how many doves I have? I'm beyond ever.
I bet you.
Yeah. I'm beyond ever saying doves are. You talk about a fickle critter, and we'll talk about another fickle critter today too. As teal season opened up this morning as well. But fickle critter. You know, you got doves one day, that doesn't mean you're having the next. I've watched my numbers.
Same way with ducks.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're too fickle. You know, these birds, even though the blue-winged teal are truly migratory, the doves we're shooting this time of year, to everybody I talk to that really studies this stuff, 90-some percent of the doves we're shooting this time of year, if not more, are local doves.
They're resident.
They've been reared here. They may migrate on somewhere later in the year, but the doves we're hunting here come from somewhere around the neighborhood, so to speak. You're part of the county, you're part of the state, somewhere. They're not coming in from Kentucky or anything this time of year. So you got what you got this time of year. But sometimes your neighbors got them and you don't got them. So we're getting, and my numbers have come and gone. The last thing I did before the storm, before Tropical Storm Gordon, was Monday on Labor Day, I went up and, as you heard, there was a best of midday mobile on that day. It's because I was bush hogging and getting I've probably now cut about 50% of my sorghum and millet, laid it down because I had better bird numbers, and then I saw them go down and down, even though I had plenty of seed on. Funny thing is, you'd say, well, it doesn't matter. You got plenty of seed on the ground. Cutting some more is not going to make a difference. The doves are about like a cowbird. I swear, you know, cowbirds, if anybody spends time bush hogging in big fields, the white birds.
They hear that tractor and
here they come. Yeah. Here they come because they get grasshoppers and all that kind of stuff comes out of the grass. Doves do the same thing when you're mowing that sorghum. I mean, I went from seeing, I had pulled in that morning, maybe there are 25, 30 birds on the power line and down in the sorghum. I start mowing later that day when the dew got off, it got dry, and there were flocks of a dozen coming by checking it out. So hopefully they stuck with me. I don't know what the storm did to them, but I will see this afternoon.
Well, more bare ground, I think, helps that too.
Yes.
When they come by and see bare ground over there.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that...
Or fresh cut ground.
Right, and that's one of the tough things to do too when you start talking about, if you have a good crop of sorghum or millet, like I did this year, you bush hog, it's hard to show ground underneath, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. There's techniques of burning and some different things you can do. You can also hay. That's something I've done in the past. You can run a hay rake. You know, if you have millet, getting millet hay is a normal agricultural practice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you hay your millet, which will most oftentimes shake the seed loose from the head and then let you bale up hay, which we can use on our farm.
Sure.
That helps as well. You can row it up with you can have a hay rake go through there and row it up. You don't even have to take it out of the field at that point.
Yeah.
That'll expose some dirt as well. We'll see. I'll have a report next week if I had birds. I know you're heading up the country to go shoot some birds as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As soon as we get through here, I'm heading north and go up to Black Belt and try to shoot some doves.
Have you heard if they've got some birds?
I don't have a clue.
But you're going to have fun. They have food.
They're going to have plenty of food. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the best part. Yeah, for sure.
And
the fellowship and the food. And if it's got doves, that's good. If it don't,
that's just extra.
That's just extra. That's right.
Make sure too.
What time does Alabama come on today?
I'm not sure.
Auburn come on to you.
Auburn starts their broadcast with us at 11:30.
11:30, okay.
That's a pregame at 11:30. So the kick will be at 2:30. I was going to say too, make sure before you go dove hunt today, you have your HIP. Okay, Harvest Inventory Program. That's that free thing you got to have, even if you have a lifetime license. This is what will get people. If you already have, if you go to get a license, they're going to ask you, and you'll probably get your HIP anyways. But if you have a lifetime or something like that, you may forget. Each year, you have to get a Harvest Inventory Program HIP. It costs you nothing, but you have to have it to be legal.
And me and you did it this morning before the show.
Online.
We went on Outdoor Alabama and did it online. It took us, what, 5 minutes, three minutes?
Max.
And we got it. Now I'm ready to go.
Yeah. So and the
I'd stop anywhere to get anything.
Right. So you've got that. Obviously, if you don't have a hunting license at all, you need your license, and you'll need your HIP. Also, for waterfowlers, your teal hunting. If you went this morning, or you're going to go tomorrow morning, or on through teal season, remember not only do you have to have the HIP, also for teal. HIP is for any migratory bird. It's for teal. It's for woodcock. It's for snipe. It's for dove. You know.
Geese, don't matter.
Any waterfowl or any migratory bird.
Or doves.
Okay. So that's you got to have it. But you also have to have a state and federal duck stamp along with that to be duck hunting. And let's talk about that a little bit because it's a weird situation right now with teal. And I'll hopefully have a report by tomorrow morning. I'm going to try to shoot teal in one of our farm ponds if I've got them.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested to hear some teal reports from the Causeway. If y'all, you know, maybe coming back from a quick hunt or something like that, you can let us know how you did. Because in the past, a situation that was lining up last week has been a good one, but it usually happens later in September. When you have a tropical system in the Gulf, we just didn't have the north wind. But my perfect recipe, and it's funny, I saw the article I wrote years and years and years ago for what was then Gulf Coast Outdoors.
Yeah.
On a formula for teal hunting, and I laid it out. I saw that, and I was like, man, I hadn't read this stuff. It's weird reading yourself a decade and a half later. But the technique that had always paid off huge for us in teal hunts is when you'd had a cold front or a dry front this time of year, and then you get a tropical storm in the Gulf. Because the teal are heading to the coast, and a lot of them are going to head across to the Yucatan and keep heading south. They sense that low pressure out there, and it's kind of like putting a stopper in a bathtub. They start piling up in numbers until that gets on by. Now, we had the tropical weather. We just didn't have the north wind, so I don't know what those numbers of teal are looking like. Reports are coming in. I mean, some friends in Baldwin County have seen them.
Depends on what side of the storm you was on.
Right, but they almost, it's a weird thing over time. I don't know there's any scientific study. I just have recognized this over decades and decades and decades, is they sense that low out there, and they just check up a little bit on the migration. Yeah. It lets us build up a few numbers. I don't know what the situation was this morning. I'll know kind of tomorrow a little bit more about this, but teal season's open. Remember now what has changed with teal hunting. If you're back into it, you can shoot six now. You know, it used to be limited, but you can shoot six now, blue-winged teal.
Yeah.
And but make sure you have all your, all your legal things checked off here before you go hunt. All right. Now, speaking of ducks, too, I want to run through this before we run out of time in this segment because we haven't had a chance to talk about it in a while. The duck numbers for the 2018 migration. Let's run through it quickly here. Estimated, this is coming from the people at the Fish and Wildlife Service. Estimated mallard abundance, 9.3 million, which is 12% lower than the 2017 estimate of 10.5 million, but 17% above the long-term average. The 2018 estimate for blue-winged teal, y'all, 6.4 million birds. That's 18% below the 2017 estimate and 27% above the long-term goal. Estimated abundance of gadwall, or as we call them, gray ducks, 2.9 million in this flight, 31% below 2017, but 43% over the long-term average. In other words, what you're seeing here is year-to-year not looking as good from 2017 to 2018 in duck numbers, but still on the abundant side over the long-term. Estimate for shovelers, oh yeah, there's a shoveler. They, similar to last year, and 62% above the long-term average, that's for sure. old shoveler. The estimated abundance of green-winged teal, 3 million for this year, which is 16% below last year. Estimate of 3.6 million and 42% above the long-term average. Estimated abundance of redheads, 1 million this year. Well, that's important to folks that hunt down in Mississippi Sound. That's similar to the 2017 estimate, but 38% above the long-term average. Pintails, 2.4 million for this year, 18% below 2017, but 40% below the long-term average of 4 million. Widgeon, gosh, we don't see those as much as we used to. That's one of my favorite ducks. American Widgeon, 2.8 million, and canvasbacks at 700,000. Those numbers similar to 2017. and their long-term averages, they are under those. So a few of the numbers coming out of the fall flight, at least what the Fish and Wildlife Service says they expect for this season. I'll put this link up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. All right, so there's some news from the hunting world and kind of doves, teal in, of course. The clock ticking as we get closer to bow season.
I'd hate to be the one to have to count them ducks.
You know how they do it? It's kind of a weird side. They do a – you and I were talking about some forestry stuff before the show started.
Right.
And how they do timber cruises.
Right.
And do quadrants and estimates. They do the same thing for ducks. They have gridded out certain areas in the Canadian Prairie, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, different places that you have waterfowl breeding areas. And they set – a long-term average. In other words, they set this thing that said, okay, here's our baseline. Here, this year, here's how many ducks are here. And they wrote that down in this grid, the 640 acres of prairie or whatever. Yeah. There's this many.
Well, they know they're there.
They know they're there, and they kind of count that.
Yeah.
They fly over and see how many nests they see in these areas. And then they go back to those same places each year. So they're not looking at the entirety of it. They're looking at these sections that they say are representative of this area, that area, the other area. And they look how the ducks in that, let's say 640 acres, say a square mile, how the ducks are doing their nesting-wise. From that, multiply it by the number of those sections of land or whatever, and they have a formula.
Right.
So what it can show you, it may never get the actual number of ducks correct, but it can show you year to year more or less or the same in that grid.
Yeah.
So it's a way kind of just to keep an idea on you have to make a greater estimate over the whole prairie or the whole breeding grounds. And they have a bunch of ducks that breed up above the at the tree line up in Canada.
Yeah, they
Those are harder to count. They're more into the prairie ducks where they can count them. But, yeah, they have to say, okay, we're going to estimate the number of the fall flight at this because it was this many last year and we said it was X. It was 10 last year and there's more breeding in that 640 acres this year, so it's 15 this year. Or whatever the formula is.
Yeah.
So that's how it rolls. All right.
I don't know what the geese count is, but it's got to be really high.
Well, snow geese are at huge numbers. Now, the Canadas you see around here, which also that opened up as well, those are resident Canadas. They're not migratory. Those are greater Canadas, the big ones. And they're not a migratory Canada. There are migratory Canada geese that get into North Alabama, but really not a thing down here. There are a few every year that get killed, but most of ours down here are residents.
Need to open up a season at Municipal Park.
Yeah, well, the city of Mobile's done that a time or two. Hey, we're going to talk about some fishing and some reef activity right here that you can snorkel off the coast. Scott Bannon from Marine Resources joins us next. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And yeah, reminder there, online at our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I'll put a link up there for the projected fall migration. Waterfowlers like me, you want to check those numbers out from the Fish and Wildlife Service. The link is up over at the Facebook page. All right, let's switch gears for a second. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we're talking. This is a time of year where, you can hunt and you can fish.
You can do a lot of things right now.
That's right. And you can also still go, get in the water, plenty warm for that, and go snorkeling. And that's part of the bigger bunch of subjects I want to talk about with Director of Marine Resources for the state of Alabama, our buddy Scott Bannon, joining us this morning. Thanks for your time.
Oh, good morning, guys. Always a pleasure to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you on the show. And let's start running down our list of questions. And I will get to the new reefs and snorkeling and maybe the marine situation after a tropical storm. But first, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since snapper season shut down. Let's talk about what happened, how we arrived at that, and what you see going forward in this exempted fishing permit.
Sure. Depending on where you sit, kind of forms your view of how the red snapper season went. From some people's perspective, it was fantastic. And from others, because the season closed a little bit early, it didn't seem as good. But from our perspective, as resource managers, it went pretty well. A lot of people got to go fishing this year. Our numbers show that the amount of effort that we had on these weekend days was almost double what it was for the 2017 season. So from our perspective, a lot of people went fishing. probably at some near record numbers. We looked at the weekend of June the 9th, the second weekend of the season. Our data, as well as some C-Lab preliminary data, shows that the spike in activity that day was absolutely incredible. And one of our officers was out on the bridge rubble, and he counted 200 boats around him. So a lot of people took the opportunity to go fishing. Overall, the weather was pretty moderate for the season. And when you combine that effort, good weather, a good economy, people went fishing, and we harvested it at a rate of almost 40,000 pounds a day. And when you do that, that was almost double last year. So last year we were, based on the last year's numbers, we estimated a 50-day season. We shortened it to 47 to give us a little leeway in there. But with that effort, it ended up at a 28-day season, and it looks like our numbers are going to fall out right about the 984,000 pounds that we had set aside under the exempted fishing permit.
Okay, because part of that buffer is important, right? So that number you're giving me right now, we don't risk a penalty going into next year?
No, under the exempted fishing permits, there's a couple of things. We have a payback provision in there, so if we exceed the number that we had for this year, it'll be reduced in next year's season under the exempted fishing permit. So we would just make an adjustment for that. But there's also a little bit of an increase in the total allowable catch for the 2019 season that was already out. So looking at our numbers, I think we're going to get a similar number of pounds in the 2019 season that we did this year, maybe even a little bit of a bump. Now, how do we estimate that season? I haven't gotten that figured out yet. We're looking at the harvest rates, and do we look at an average of the last 2 years since they were similar numbers of pounds and things to develop a season for next year. But I don't know what our capacity is to continue to put more people on the water. That's an unknown for us.
I want to get into something that I think you made some reference to about the actual observation of the number of people on the bridge rubble. And as a guy that fishes there, Mike does, we could probably say there are 200 boats. But I mean, I was wondering, when you say that the fishing, the pressure, the people going out doubled year to year, is there a chance that you're getting better reporting through the Snapper app, people reporting their catch, then the same number of people were last year, but this year more people did like they were supposed to and reported, and it showed up at a higher level?
Well, there's some factors in there that help apply the numbers of anglers that go. So we feel pretty confident on the number of anglers because we have several different programs that help determine how many people go fishing. But we did see an increase in the number of people that participated in the Snapper Check program. And some things you've heard me say about some 30% reporting rates are, that is not really the number of people that are actually reporting. There are some correction factors in there due to we look at the time that a person reports. And so sometimes the validation kicks out a person who reported, but they reported too late in the day, or there were some inconsistencies in the numbers between what they reported and what they were shown while they were what they showed while they were being surveyed by our staff. And so that's just a statistical analysis. But the number of people that are actually reporting has moved up to closer to 50%. So about half the people are submitting a report, but there are some inconsistencies when they're surveyed. So we appreciate the increase in the reporting. There needs to be a little bit more accuracy in when they're reporting. A lot of people are still reporting late. Excuse me. It's when they get home, and it's outside the time window.
What is that? By the way, just side note, what is the time window?
The law requires that when those fish hit the dock, they need to be reported.
Sure, sure. Oh, yeah, I understand that. We've talked about that, on the show a whole bunch, and I think it's worth telling people again. I just say, as long as the fish is over water, there's water underneath it, and I don't mean water in your cooler. There's water underneath it. You're okay. The second that boat comes out of the water or your cooler comes out of the water, those fish should have been reported. But what I'm getting at is, let's say, I mean, I'm not trying to just make up things to make it complicated, but if I fished at night, or whatever, we came in late or something like that, and at that point, I'm pulling up to the dock at 11 o'clock at night. Does that get DQ'd if I put that entry in?
Absolutely not. Those you can report 24 hours a day.
Okay.
We want that. What happens is our survey staff, when they're at a boat ramp or at a marina and they survey you, they document the time that they interviewed you, and there still is a little bit of lack of education on our part to remind anglers that if our staff conducts a survey, that is not considered reporting.
Right.
We do think that that plays in a little bit.
Yeah, because you
they
would
said,
think
well,
that
I answered
that
all these questions, yeah. That's a report. But they still need to report through the app. But we show a number of people. We can see how many reports a person has submitted. So if you reported your fish and you were surveyed, we go back and look, did you ever have any reports before that day, and did you have any after that day? And there's a certain percentage of people that never have another report. So those are people that are not going to report at all. They're just choosing not to, because most people make more than one trip and report more than one trip. But we look at the anomalies. If your report said you had 10 fish, and then when you were surveyed, you actually had 9 fish, that really does happen, and we all get frustrated when somebody counted wrong on the boat. But we factor all that into the number that we're determining at the end of the season. But it does look like about 50% of the people are actually reporting, and that is an increase, and we do appreciate that.
So how are we going to get it up to 90%? And what do y'all do if somebody doesn't report it? Let's say somebody pulls out of the launch ramp and they're heading down to the gas station and y'all check them. What do you do to them then?
They do get issued a ticket. We issued about 22 tickets, I believe, this season. I would have to double-check that number, but we did issue citations. We have been issuing citations throughout the last couple of years. But what we would like to do is try and fine-tune the snapper check program to maybe look at something a little more like Mississippi, where you have a hail-out number, so that if you're on the water, enforcement can document that immediately, that you have to have a number to be out there to fish, and then before you can get a new number to fish the next day, you have to close out that number. Even if you didn't catch any fish, you said, I'm going red snapper fishing, I didn't catch any, you at least have to report the zero, and then we issue you a new number. That the system that Mississippi uses is a really good system.
Isn't it, what, scales and tails or something like that?
Scales and tails, and the difficulty for us is to close out all those numbers if people have not closed them out. We have about 12 or 13 times the number of anglers they have.
Wow,
so it's a logistical burden to be able to close those out. So we're looking at, is there a statistical number that we can achieve that we close out a certain percentage of those? But we are looking at ways to make the snapper check program more accurate, more detailed. We received our certification this year.
Let's do this. We got to run to the break here. We're coming back more with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. We'll talk more snapper, and we'll talk some real close reefs, too. I mean, real close, y'all. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. And our guest, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Scott, before we went to the break, you were mentioning something. I had to go to the break there because the commercial break doesn't wait on any of us. We just have to go when they say. But you mentioned something about certification of the numbers from the snapper season. What's that all about?
Well, Alabama has received certification from the National Marine Fisheries Service for our snapper check program. What that means is that they agree that our system works and that it's a viable way to account for the harvest here in Alabama. And so those are the numbers that are going to be used to help estimate the harvest across the Gulf of Mexico. Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama all have certified programs that the federal government agrees that your numbers are good, and we're going to use those in the count. So and that's how we knew we needed to close the season early. If we did not have a certified snapper check program and we didn't stop the season when we did, our overrun would probably put us into a position where we would not have a season next year.
Huh. Wow. Now, no, Mississippi continued on after Alabama closed. Mississippi season still continued, right?
They did, and it's a completely different fishery there. It's a longer way to run. They don't have the reef system available to them like us. But they
and you said they don't have they don't have nearly the anglers we do.
That's correct. It's a much, much smaller fishery, and they only have a few charter boats, even on that federal for hire side. So it's just even though we're neighbors, it is a completely different fishery.
Yeah. Now you mentioned this too, Mike, during the break about kind of what the what the aftermath is, whether the reefs, have you gone out and done a survey, looked at the condition on our reefs here in state waters, or are they federal waters? Where'd you go?
We went out in federal waters on a research trip a couple of weeks ago where I personally got to go. It's a program that we sponsor through the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, and Dr. Sean Powers and his folks do some great work with studying the artificial reef system. And what we saw at some of these close-in reefs where there were still plenty of fish, they were there. You see them on the ROV, you see them on the fish finder, and that when you catch them and do the research on them, some of them are they're a lot smaller than they are at the beginning of the season. And that's really what you should see after that fishing pressure. But we're really seeing you know, good age groups, good numbers. So we're still very confident that the reef system is holding a good number of fish.
You know, I know Bob Shipp was doing a study where they would go to different reefs and they would tag reefs, and they'd put a blue tag on the snapper at this reef and a red tag on the snapper at this reef, and they were checking to see if they would get off of those reefs and go to other reefs. Are y'all still doing that type of study?
Those programs do continue, and Dr. Shipp's program still continues. And a matter of fact, we were attempting to tag some amberjack on that last trip to do some studies on their movement. They're doing some acoustic tagging, which is very interesting work to see how far they travel. But yes, there are multiple tagging programs that are still in play on the reef system.
We'd probably have to get with Bob to get that program to see how that works.
You know, I could follow up at some point with some information on there because we get reports from that. Or Bob is always a great person to have on, and you know, he is just a historian of red snapper information.
Yeah, to me, it's real interesting. Do the snapper get off the reefs that they are basically on, or do they mainly stay there?
They generally stay very close because we have a lot of reefs that are very near to each other, and yeah. What we have found is that they will travel among the different reefs close by, but they don't really travel very far. You have these anomalies like a storm that may displace some of them.
Sure.
It might be interesting to see this year what some of the tagging mm-hmm. results show, but now we're post season, so that makes that a little strange. But yeah, it shows that they pretty much grow up on a reef, they stay there for several years, and then they move off away from it when they're fully mature.
You know, and I just wonder, just anecdotally, I know you. I mean, you've been doing this a long time, and from the enforcement side too. But I wonder about the biology, because you hear when we have a tropical storm like this. Growing up, we always talked about that's a grouper storm. You know, a grouper storm that's not so big it's torn everything up and nobody can go fishing because we're busy trying to put our lines back together, but just enough of a shake up that it seemed like the grouper fishing would always pick up afterwards. Do you know, why are they just eaten more then, or they've gotten shuffled out of their holes? I mean, have you have any theories on that?
You know, there's some different lines of discussion about that. I talked with some folks this morning that sometimes because you have disrupted their environment, the bait fish may have moved, they may have moved from their normal home, so now they're more aggressive in their feeding. So I don't know if we have any real science to back that up. I'm going to ask that question myself on the trip tomorrow.
Okay, well, very good. Because, yeah. I mean, we always, you know, hear about, oh, that'd been a grouper storm. You go whack the grouper now. Quickly, I want to get into talking about reefs with you as well, but I do want to say that, okay, with snapper now in the rear view, trigger, amberjack in the rear view, what's our next? I mean, what are we looking at? Any other closures for the year? I mean, are we good?
No, in general, I think we're going to be in pretty good shape the rest of the year. You know,
no beeliner
really
closure. No beeliner closure. We can still fish beeliners.
No, you'll still be able to fish beeliners. That's in pretty good shape.
You know, that's. But you know, I wonder about this, and this is probably a conversation for a long ranging show down the road. But and I don't, you know, I think the whole house is built on sand, obviously with the federal program, but. Moving forward, when you shut one down, and maybe you're right, maybe now that school's back in, football, hunting, all those things, that changes the pressure. But if that wasn't there, this was in a textbook, when you shut one fishery down, you move pressure to another fishery. And it seems like the pressure will move further out offshore and on our graph here to species that may not be as prolific as the ones we've shut down in the first place. Is that understandable?
I think that's a fair statement that we do see that there's some effort shift. And since there's not a lot of effort on, say, beeliners during the rest of red snapper season, the effort shows up when that season is over.
Mm-hmm. Or,
so it's really, sometimes it's kind of a wash when you look at it based on the numbers. As long as we can maintain a reasonable red snapper fishing season, I think those beeliners will probably still be able to maintain some solid numbers, because it takes a little extra effort to mm-hmm. fish for those, a little bit different technique, and it comes in to play a little more when people have moved off to hunting and football yeah. And school activities.
What about when you did your from a month ago or whenever when you did your last survey? Did y'all on the ROV? Did y'all see lionfish? Did the numbers look steady, up, down? Any improvement in that?
On those particular reefs, we did not see a lot of lionfish.
Good.
And so that's good, and that's what we want to see. It's
yeah.
Unusual that you have a fishery where you say, I want to see them gone.
Yeah, I do. There's like feral pigs on land. We want them gone.
Yep.
You know, they don't belong there.
No.
Okay, now I want to switch gears here and talk about something that it's really interesting to me, because not only do I like to go out and fish in the Gulf, but when conditions are right – I don't scuba dive as much as I did when I was a younger man, but I still like to snorkel. My kids are getting into it now, too, which is exciting for me. And to hear about some reefs off South Baldwin County where we can go do that.
Sure. Under our new circulatory reef program, we're placing some reef systems very near to the shoreline, a couple of hundred feet out, so that they're accessible to folks. They're also, they're an ecosystem enhancement type project, but they're available to people to swim out and see the science at work. They can see these reefs that have been put out there. There's a pole that goes into the bottom with these discs with all these different shapes and nooks and crannies for the critters to grow on and the fish to hide in. And when the weather's good and the water clarity works to your advantage, I think it's really going to be a popular spot to see the different type species that show up there. And for a lot of people who never have the opportunity to experience that, it's going to make it accessible to them.
It is really cool. Let me just give you all some – I mean, I've not been to these, but growing up – and it's funny. I'm glad these are here now, because I won't take my children to do the same things that I used to do because I now know better. But I used to do a lot of snorkeling
yeah.
at Perdido Pass Rocks
yeah.
when I was a young guy.
Yeah.
And, now all these years later I go, there's lots and lots of boats going through there, and I don't know what somebody is –
And sometimes a current is really,
the current,
really going
it's
fast.
Very spooky. So yes. I'm not – but I mean, I'm not saying y'all do that, but I used to do that as
yeah.
a younger guy. And to be able to see, I'd be in there looking for big fish or sheephead or whatever, but all the different crabs and shrimp and fish and urchins and all the stuff in there is really neat. I think people around here think they got to travel, so they got to go to the Keys to see all that. And there's a whole bunch of species that are only down there, but there's a lot to see here if you get some hard structure and you can snorkel.
Absolutely. We'll mark the locations of these reefs on the shoreline with some poles that will be yellow with red stripes and have some lights on top of them. And so that will also help give boaters some awareness of where they potentially may see snorkelers. And since these are relatively close to the shoreline, we're hoping there's not a lot of user group conflict between people in their boats versus people that are swimming out there, because it's just barely outside of the normal swim area. And we do want people to see the science in action. You get to see that these reef systems forming. So if you come to the Gulf on a regular basis, you get to see them this year when they're first out and see them develop over the next couple of years and see how habitat gets created through an artificial reef system.
Scott, what kind of structure are you putting down?
It's a pole with the disc that we use in some of our bigger reefs offshore that go inside. But it's a concrete type material that is got all kinds of little nooks and crannies. And you can go to our website at outdooralabama.com, and there's some pictures on there to show what it'll look like underwater.
Yeah, I tell you what, we'll put a link up there too for people to go check it out on our Facebook page. I'm sure they can do it through y'all's as well. But you said close to shore. Can you give us like a landmark of any sort that, hey, this is going to be just off the beach from
sure.
here? Is it going to be just out from the hangout? Is it just going to be out from this condo or that? Where do we look?
Down, like one of them is going to be near Romar Beach down there off of the Gulf State Park property that we have there, so that there's public access, because they're all near public access points, because that was a concern for people is, well, how do we get there?
Sure.
They're all located off public access points. And those locations and a graphic will be put on our website as well. I don't think the graphic is up just yet, because we want to be able to show people exactly where to go. There will be kiosks on the shoreline that show the pictures of what they're going to look at and the shape and really guide them straight to the thing. We don't want people swimming around for hours out there trying to find it.
Any chance of us on the west side here getting some of this love? Anything coming to Dolphin Island?
Well, the challenge there is that the water quality is different. It's well, the quality is not different. Excuse me, the clarity.
Yeah, yeah.
On
don't get
on.
Yeah,
it tends to be darker, and
yeah, it does.
Makes it much more challenging. It's much more nutrient rich on
yes.
the western side because of the way the bay system enhances the nutrients here in the water, and that's why we have great fishing off of Alabama. But to the east, the water is clearer, and it makes it an easier project to work on over there as opposed to on the Dauphin Island side.
Okay. So they will be a South Baldwin fixture. And you said just off the beach those poles will mark. How? I know there will be variants, but generally how deep of water are we talking about?
About 8 to 12 feet of water. So it's
man, that's perfect for
good yeah, clarity days. You'll be able to see it. And most people that swim and snorkel would be able to get down there and swim around them and see them without stressing themselves out too much.
Yeah. Y'all let your air. This, I had the kids on vacation this year, and this is they finally realized. They said, how can you go down and stay? And I said, blow the air out of your lungs.
You
and they go down. And they looked at me like, they looked at me like I just explained to them how the wheel works. They said, holy cow, this is the best thing ever. it's good to have. Snorkeling's a lot of fun and out there. And I guess, you know, of course, as a fisherman, I'm starting to think, there's a couple species that might be interested in that spot too.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah, Mike, you got...
Yeah, no, okay, I was going to say, yeah, flounder would be really good. You got tarpon going to be coming
just,
by.
Don't
yeah.
talk about all that
yeah.
stuff. If people people want to look, too, at the bigger zone near shore, the state zone, where are we with the... Wasn't it 600-some-odd structures, maybe 200 spots that were going to be deployed for... I mean, we're not talking about snorkeling stuff here. We're talking about out offshore.
Right, inside the nine-mile zone, we have seven locations where we're putting out the reefs. And that project will be completed probably sometime next year, but we've already begun placing the reefs inside those zones. So we're really looking to see, as this progresses, is how they develop and how the fish are attracted to there and what is a good spacing for the reef. So it's a great science experiment from that perspective. And I think it's really going to be attractive for folks to be able to fish closer to shore with some smaller boats.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that Alabama is doing the reef program and making Alabama coast. I mean, we are the red snapper capital of the world. There's no doubt about it. And it's because of all the effort that the Conservation Department's done and the anglers over the years and the charter boat captains and everybody that's put all the reefs out there is just absolutely phenomenal fishing.
It is. And I also like to remind people that, you know, these – same reefs that help with the red snapper population help with the gray snapper, the beeliners, the grouper, the amberjack, the tremendous number of species that benefit from a reef system. It's even the mackerel because they'll hang out.
Yeah, the king,
swim over
the ling. I mean everything.
That's good
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we'll put some links up too, so y'all can check out these snorkeling or these very circulatoral. Is that right?
Circulatoral
reefs look like. Those will be on our Facebook page as well. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Thank you as always for your time, and we'll hope to get you back on very soon.
I'll be glad to be back.
All right,
thanks,
good
Scott.
Stuff. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and we'll wrap it up here on a Saturday because I know we got. Dove Fields to go to.
We got to go.
Yeah, it's a man, go get sunburned.
Yeah.
Wear your big straw hat. Right now, right. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Director Scott Bannon from Alabama Marine Resources, and we'll get him back on the show pretty soon. He said probably within the next couple weeks he'll be back on with us more to talk
That'd
about.
Be great. He's a book of knowledge.
Yes, he is. Yep. And, if you get a chance, you know, you're not like Mike and I, and you're not running to the woods the next month and a half. Hey, the water will stay warm and hopefully clear up like it does in October. Get out there and do a little snorkeling. That's fun. Good.
Yeah.
I do love it. Good family activity.
So tell me, I didn't get to listen to Bobby Averscott's report Thursday. What did he say Thursday about the fishing? Is he fishing right now after the storm?
Yeah, so he said he was ready to go I guess when we talked Thursday, he was not fishing that morning, but he would be fishing today. And he said, and he made a good point, because I was down the mouth about the water clarity, because gosh, it was, I was down there through the weekend and the day of the storm and all that, and it was ugly.
Oh,
because we had
yeah.
just that sustained wind, and it wasn't even fresh water making it. It was just like Mississippi Sound and other places, when the wind blows down the sound, it just gets chopped up and gets muddy.
Sure.
But he made a good point. He said, you know, we got these 2-foot tides high in the morning and out. This, which, by the way, I always loved it. It would line up this opening weekend of teal season like that, because you can get back in places and don't have to push bowl as much. But yeah. You get big tides in the morning. And he said those 2-foot tides probably have it flushed out by this morning, tomorrow, and going into next week. He said, you know.
That quick.
Yeah, that quick. And he said, you know, you go into shallow water, too, it's going to clear up more quickly. And those places should be holding fish. And those fish should be in the eating mood. Same way we were just talking to Director Bannon.
About grouper.
Grouper yeah. storms, right? Sure. Grouper storms. Hey, grouper fishing is always good after a storm. And going back, kind of thinking about over the years, trout fishing is pretty good after storms, too.
Yeah.
So and there may be something to it. Yeah, he's still catching, and he's catching them shallow. He never stopped, even though he's doing a good bit of his fishing in that 8 to 10 feet of water.
Yeah.
He's still catching fish every morning for an hour, hour and a half in that 3 feet or less.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, this is as hot as the water gets. But he also made a good point, too. All the rain and all that cooled the water down.
Well, not only that, had all of that influx of salt water push up in the bay, too, and mm-hmm. all the rivers and everything. So that's got to help a little bit, even though we got a lot of fresh water coming down. But that's not going to last real long. Probably within a week, that all that water that we had, all that rainwater, should be about flushed out, wouldn't
yep.
you think?
Yep.
Within a week, we looked at the river report earlier, and it looked like about a week, and it's going to be flushed back out and be back normal again.
Yep.
So fishing should be good. I know, Sean, after Hurricane Frederick,
mm-hmm.
me and David McKeithen, that blew the bridge away at Dolphin Island.
Oh yeah.
Me and David McKeithen went to Cedar Point and launched the boat and went snapper fishing. Of course, we didn't have it; just a few public wrecks out
right,
there
you right.
go to.
Oh, how was
man,
it?
What did we kill it? Oh, it's like, I don't know, maybe 3 days, 2 days after the hurricane, whatever it was, just as soon as we could get out there, oh, man, we killed them. And then that other storm that came through with the grouper.
Yep.
We'll talk about
yeah,
that
we
another do, time.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, we got to go, because Prep Sports Report on the way in next. Hopefully the bass will be biting this afternoon, too. I got that and doves on my mind. All right, y'all have a great one. We'll see you next week.